We're going to be looking at our focus today, which is on baldness in animals, hair loss, that kind of thing. But when I say baldness, I'm thinking like it could just be a little patch on an animal, but it could mean something more serious, possibly.
Yes, yes, of course. Baldness can be a normal thing, or it can be abnormal. When I say normal, I mean, for example, if your cat's been in a fight or your dog's been racing around with another dog, they can literally get tufts of hair pulled out, and then you have a bald patch, and that's normal, meaning it's going to grow back because that's what happens, you know, they get better. But it can be very abnormal if your animal is losing hair, especially if it's on both sides of the body or symmetrical. For example, if you get notice hair loss along the flanks or along the back of the legs or on either side of the front legs, that can sometimes indicate that there's actually, you know, a problem with the body's hormonal system. So it also can be related to itching and scratching. Sometimes animals that are itchy and allergic, they scratch and scratch and scratch, and so the hair falls out. Sometimes it can be due to parasites. There are mites out there as well that literally don't cause any other symptoms other than they just lose hair. And there are other mites that cause symptoms that are related to itching, which then causes hair loss. So, yeah, I mean, it's a big subject and it's a common problem. And I see animals all the time for baldness and hair loss. And it's important to actually try and understand what the actual cause is, you know, in order to take the right action.
We were talking just before to Helen from Good Magazine, and she's got her 10-week-old baby, Phoebe, but she has her two dogs as well, two Cocker Spaniels, one that's 10 years old, one that's just a couple of years old. And it made me think we should ask you, really, when it comes to taking home a newborn baby, when you've got existing pets, the best way to manage that situation. I mean, it's not necessarily going to be a big problem, is it?
No, I don't think so. I have very, very seldom in my career come across a situation where a family with a new baby literally has had to get rid of a pet because there's either been aggression or a major issue. Sometimes, you know, babies or children can develop allergies, and then that's a different scenario. But usually the change is pretty smooth, and I actually think the anxiety and the worry is more in the minds of the actual parents, especially if they're new parents, they've never had a baby before. It's a completely, you know, new thing, and you obviously want to make sure you do everything right, and you're worried about that. So what I generally tell people, and I think it makes sense, you know, if you're going to change your pet's routine, for example, if you have two dogs and they sleep in your bed, but now you want your baby to sleep in the bed, don't kick the dogs out of the bed the first night the baby comes home from hospital. You need to kick them out 3 or 4 months before. If you're not going to change anything in the routine, then don't change it. But if you are going to make a change, make it far enough in advance that the dog doesn't actually associate the new little child with the change, and then they think their hierarchy and their pack order has somehow been disrupted by that. So a lot of people ask me questions about cats. See, they go, oh, you know, cat's going to, you know, cause a problem for the baby. And yes, it is true that a cat may well go and sleep in the crib and sleep on top of your child, which is not ideal. So,
but why do they do that? Because they get the comfort.
Yes, and it's warm,
and
babies
snuggly.
are little, you know, water bottles, pretty much. That's what they are, especially if they're all snuggled up in their swaddling or whatever it is that you use. So, I mean, I've got two boys, and they were babies once, believe it or not. And when I allowed the cats in the room always when the baby wasn't sleeping, but every time the baby slept, I'd made sure that the room was free of animals and the door was closed. And that's the only thing that I actually did when, I mean, I had four dogs and four cats, I think, at the time, and there was no issue. They adapt, they figure it out.
And just becomes like one of the pack, I suppose.
I don't know if I'm right about this or not, but if you're going to have a problem with the introduction of a human baby with the pets you have around the house, territoriality, jealousy, and so on, don't you think it's, I'm asking you because I don't really know, do you think it's probable that those pets are going to be showing certain inappropriate behaviors long before the baby ever comes? In other words, the signs are there anyway?
I would assume so. I think it depends on your lifestyle. You know, if you're a couple that only socializes, you know, with other adults, possibly, and you've never actually seen that happen. I mean, you know, certain dogs are funny with children. So, you know, if you've seen that your dogs are funny with children before you have a baby, you know, you could take steps to try and socialize them more with kids and try and get them more comfortable. But having said that, I mean, you know, I have known many instances of dogs that are not great with kids. But as soon as a baby comes home and it starts as the baby and the dog grows with it, they actually isn't a problem, you know, because, you know, you don't bring a child home. You're bringing a tiny, you know, whining baby home. And surprisingly, a lot of dogs get very protective over the child. And they sit with the child and they want to, you know, they'll come and tell you anxiously when the baby's crying. It's quite amazing, in fact.
Again, that sort of, for dogs, it's that sort of pack instinct, isn't it? If you're the owner, the human is the leader of the pack, and you've dealt with it appropriately, like you said, you've sort of slowly, gradually introduced the idea of there's changes to be had within the household, they tend to respond positively if you're guiding them in the right way.
Yes, that's true. And in fact, I would say, if I had to just sort of, you know, anecdotally look back at my experience, cats, in fact, have more of an issue because cats are more sensitive and they get annoyed by changes. A small baby is not really going to affect a cat too much. But, you know, baby then starts crawling, then it starts toddling around. And for a good couple of years, they're actually very rough. Even though they don't mean to be rough, they want to, oh, kitty, kitty, and they run after the kitty and like jump on it and pull a tail. And the cats don't like that at all. And it's important to, you know, teach your child that to be soft and gentle with the cat. And one great thing about a cat is that a cat will generally take itself away from a situation. It sees the toddler coming and it disappears. You're not going to get, it's rare that you're going to find a cat that's going to stand off against the toddler and attack it. You might get a swipe of a paw or something like that, but then the child will know, hang on, okay, this is a potentially harmful thing, I stay away from it. You just get through it. Just use a bit of common sense is what I would say.
I mean, I think, sorry, you were just going to say something, but I think a lot of it comes down to the simple idea of setting boundaries, you know, establishing them with human beings, with animals, and being consistent about setting those boundaries. So what rooms are your pets allowed into? What rooms are they not allowed into? And those kinds of things, you know.
What's the animal?
So the time is here, the first clue to our mystery animal. So I'm going to be giving you three clues throughout the hour. Today's mystery animal is a close relative of geese and ducks. Its feathers are white and its beak normally orange. However, some animals have black feathers or a yellowish beak.
Animal news.
So we're going to get into some animal news with the experts. That's Dr. Lucinda Natras from DKC Veterinary Clinic at Motor City, along with her partner, Todd Carson, partner and husband, I should say, managing partner of Dubai Kennels and Cattery. Here to take your questions, as you know, on health, nutrition, relocation, daycare or boarding. So news, looking at stories around the globe and local stories as well when it comes to pets and animals. And one that Linda, our producer, selected this week is neglected dog who lost paws to frostbite is given prosthetics. A two-year-old Rottweiler who developed frostbite when he was a puppy is now learning how to walk again using prosthetic paws. Brutus, he lives in the US, the city of Loveland. That's a nice name for a city. Well, the sad part of this is he was left outside in freezing temperatures and his breeder later decided to amputate all four paws. So you know a bit more about this story because you've watched it on the news, is that right?
Yeah, I have to be careful now. I watched it on Fox News. No, I'm only interested for a spectator sport to watch news.
You mean
news.
Fox News,
yeah,
yes.
Fox News, yeah.
It's anyway, not real news, it's spectator
it's
not, sport
it's
news.
Spectator sport, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so I saw a video of the dog and him walking with the prosthetics and everything, and he looked absolutely ridiculous and hilarious, but he seemed quite happy and comfortable. That's kind of a cute story, nice story, you know?
Yeah, it is a nice story. You know, it's a very handsome, good-looking dog.
You saw it too, eh?
Yeah, he's big, shiny coat. He's in fantastic condition. And, they had these prosthetic limbs made for him. There is a specialist in America who's actually quite famous who does a lot of these prosthetics. And I think they elicited his help as a charity thing. People raised a lot of money. He actually needed surgery first to actually get the ends made properly, of the legs made properly to actually fit, you know, the prosthetics. And, he gets them put on and out he goes for walks. And the owner just says, you know, he kind of walks around like a high-stepping animal for a few minutes, getting used to them each time, and then he goes gets better. And he actually, he negotiated a little obstacle course. They make him go over a little, you know.
I mean, he's clearly figuring it out. I mean, he looks...
Yeah, he doesn't look like he's completely comfortable, and he's not running or anything.
He looks hilariously ridiculous walking, because he takes these very high-stepped steps, because he can't sense, you know, now where his feet end.
Yes,
so he's really struggling with that, but he doesn't look like he's struggling. He looks perfectly happy.
And he's wagging his tail, and he's sniffing around, and he's enjoying being outside.
And that's actually, you know, one of the things about animals becoming unwell or injured in any way. You know, again, we've mentioned quite often over the last many weeks, often at my urging, the tendency of human beings to impose our worries and concerns on what animals are actually experiencing. And, you know, it's true that this dog looks absolutely ridiculous, but he doesn't look like he feels ridiculous. Mm. He looks perfectly happy. And so, you know, you have to take it from his point of view. I remember many, many, many years ago, we had a Pekingese at the boarding facility. It must be at least 10 or 11 years ago. And he was in the play yard with another dog, and the dog and them were playing, and the other dog sort of took a playful snap at the Pekingese, and the Pekingese's eyeball popped out.
Oh, gosh.
Literally popped out.
Yeah, but they do. They do that.
Yeah.
What do you mean they do that?
If you give a Pekingese a fright, its eyeball pops out.
It just pops out.
I mean, seriously, because they have they're very, very shallow eye sockets.
Yeah.
So if you have no idea.
Very big eyeballs.
If you hold a Pekingese and you like at the vet, if you can see it stressing, you can literally see the eyes coming and you have to just chill it out again.
Well, I grew up with Pekingese. I had no idea. My grandmother always had Pekingese. I don't know if she knew, but I had no idea. But as a child, maybe it was a good thing I didn't know that, 'cause it might have made me feel slightly different towards him. I don't know. Yeah.
But I mean, everybody at the kennels at the time was, of course, taken quite aback by this, because one of our handlers came from the exercise yard holding the Pekingese in her arms, as you would any normal dog, and he was sitting upright, and one of his eyeballs, audience, I'm really sorry, but one of his eyeballs was literally hanging down on his face, out of his eye socket.
But was he in pain?
It was grotesque, right?
Yeah,
But the dog was sitting there panting. Like,
totally fine.
Yeah, licking the handler's hand. Absolutely fine. We took the dog off to the hospital, to the vet. The vet did the surgery that was necessary. Within a couple of days, the dog was fine.
Yeah, you put them back. As long as the optic nerve's not damaged,
But the moral of the story is that the dogs, animals generally, have a completely different relationship to their medical experiences than we have. Because a lot of the trauma that we experience is actually because we're aware of our own experience. And we attach all sorts of emotions and expectations and predictions of future and so on.
Sure.
And the animals are just in the moment. And I'm not saying they don't suffer or feel pain, but I am saying that it's almost never as bad as we think it is for them.
We have to sort of check in on ourselves. But as you said before, look at it from the animal's point of view.
Do your best.
Do your best as you can. And we're going to talk a bit more about that in a moment, because someone's just texted in. But I just want to come back on a story we raised earlier regarding this male cocker spaniel that was rescued. This is from Animal Action Abu Dhabi. It was on their Facebook page, and he's got a microchip. They're trying to trace this dog's owner. So if you know of somebody that's lost their cocker spaniel Abu Dhabi way, then this could be their dog. But this dog has been picked up and he's lost his eye, and it's obviously a recent trauma, and he's a beautiful looking dog. So terrible that he's had this trauma to him, but he's been rescued and the eye's been treated. But again, something that for us looks pretty awful, and of course it would have been painful for this dog to have had this trauma, but now he's had surgery, he can recover and lead a normal life as a dog, you know.
Can
adjust to it.
They do adjust incredibly well to having one eye. Cats do, you know, all animals do. They just have to, I think, you know, just adjust their depth perception, but that just takes a bit of time. But provided the other eye remains healthy, I don't really think that they are too bothered at all.
And if you don't mind, there's another recent case we've been experiencing with one of our customers whose dog was diagnosed with cancer, and one of the hind legs had to be removed. And, you know, the pet owner understandably sort of you know, dithered about whether to do this for quite a long time, weeks or months, because she really didn't want this to happen and invested a lot of emotional concern about what was going to happen to the dog.
Which is understandable.
Absolutely.
Totally understandable.
Yeah. And it was a large dog, so, you know, removing a limb off a large dog.
You're thinking, is this animal going to have quality of life?
I mean, within a day or two of finally agreeing to remove the leg and having the leg removed, the dog was transformed. He was happy. He was out of pain. He was wobbling a little bit, not used to having only three legs, but, you know, he's fine now. And she could immediately see how much relief he was experiencing and how much happier he was.
Mm. Just to come back quickly on the Cocker Spaniel, just to highlight here that the animal was, it looks like the animal was lost rather than dumped. It was picked up by close to a rubbish dump, but it's saying that they think he was lost. So because yesterday it was holiday for many people, with it being Easter, some of the vets weren't open, so they are trying to trace the animal's owner. So if you are aware of somebody that's lost their Cocker Spaniel, then do contact us, let us know on 4001. We can connect you with Animal Action, or go directly to them, Animal Action, via their Facebook page.
What's the animal?
So clue number two, the lifespan of today's mystery animal is often over 10 years and sometimes even 20. Larger than the goose, it can reach a length of 1.5 metres or more. Its long neck allows it to dip into the water and gather aquatic plants and seeds that form the major part of its diet. I'm a mystery animal today. What animal am I? Talking to vet Dr. Lucinda Natras from DKC Veterinary Clinic based at Motor City, and Todd Carson, managing partner of Dubai Kennels and Cattery. We've been going to be focusing a little bit on baldness in animals, hair loss, but of course if you've got any issues with your pet or animal and looking for advice, then you can text in with that question. But coming back just a little bit on what you were saying before, Todd, and I know you've said this a few times over the weeks about, as humans, as pet owners, we love our animals, and of course we tend to put our thoughts and emotions onto what they may be thinking or feeling. And one of our listeners texts in to say, how do you know the emotion of an animal when they really can't talk and let you know what's happy or what's sad? So it's kind of along the lines of what you're saying, is that we need to connect with the animal, know our animal, get familiar with our animal to recognize and spot signs that may be of concern to us. But, you know, maybe a few indicators.
Yeah, well, you know, from a veterinary perspective, there's been much research and time and energy spent on trying to recognize pain in domestic pets because, you know, you're right. You can't. They can't say, oh, it hurts here, you know. So there's been lots of to and fro's and studies done, and dogs differ quite a lot from cats in how they express pain. And in fact, large hospitals where they have animals and critical care units, they actually have a pain score measurement. You know, everyone, this nursing staff, doctor staff, veterinary staff, they actually learn to grade a pain score, a little bit like when you go into the hospital and you see all those little faces and the doctor will tell you, what are you, a one, a four, a five? Obviously, the animal can't tell us what they are, but based on how they are behaving and what they're doing, we can actually grade their pain. Obviously, it's not exact, but I have to say it's been done over many, many years and people have had a lot of practice at it. And I think that if you're good at it, you actually can nail it. And basically, they're things like, you know, how much the animal is moving, how much it's breathing, how fast it's breathing, the rate of the respiration, the nature of the respiration,
heart rate,
especially blood pressure can be an indication of pain as well. Are they interested in food or not? Do they interact with you? Are they cowering away in, you know, in the corner of the cage? So all of those things, you know, are put together to get a pain score. At home, you know, a dog obviously will often show you with an obvious limp that it's in pain, or it will cry when you touch it, or it will be more reluctant to go up and down stairs, for example, won't want to walk, won't want to, basically will change energy levels and just show you that he's not well. And that's when you'd need to go to a vet and have it looked at. Cats are much more difficult. They tend to withdraw. They tend to just start not socializing with you at all, being very quiet, sleeping a lot in a corner. Sometimes they don't groom themselves. You'll notice their coats start looking a bit starry and greasy. Also, they're very, very quick to go off their food when they're in pain. Cats that used to jump up on the counters and jump up on couches, they stop jumping up. Sometimes they even struggle with the litter box. They'll start, you know, going outside the litter box. So, you know, your vet should ask you these questions, you know, if you're trying to decide, or if my old cat now is in pain from arthritis, for example. These are perhaps part of the clues that we can actually look at to see if, you know, there is an issue or not.
But they're very strong clues. I want to emphasize for the person who sent in the question that many of the things that Lucinda's just outlined fall into the category of behavior. And if you know your pet, which of course you do, then, you know, if you're paying any attention at all, you'll see that the behavior is changing. Now, you may not know why, you may not understand it, and you may not even think it's important, but if you do see behavioral changes of any kind, then just, you know, pay a little more attention over a period of time, because the behavioral side of it is going to be the first step in diagnosis, and it may end up ultimately being a very strong indicator throughout the process of whether or not there's a lot of pain, whether or not he's well, whether or not there's psychological issues or physical issues. So it even though they can't talk, it is very possible to get very objective information about whether or not they're okay.
Mm. Yeah, an interesting thing also is the question of sadness. I mean, the listener asked, you know, how do we know if they're happy or sad? You know, it's a hard question to answer, because I don't think, you know, they get sad to the degree that we do, you know, in terms of severe sort of emotional depression. They certainly do feel loss, and they certainly do pine. I mean, that's obviously a well-documented thing. So, you know, a mother that loses puppies or a baby, or even in other wild animals that lose a mating partner for life, they definitely go through a pining process. But it's a process that generally seems to end with time, you know. So it's difficult to answer the question, how do I know if my pet is sad? Because I actually think sadness is very much a human emotion. And I think it's possibly more, I would characterize it with pets as, is my pet feeling loss? Mm. Or any kind of anxiety with being separated or something like that, you know.
Mm.
And we've discussed that before too. So
yeah, and it's a very good distinction. Coming back on what you were saying, Todd, as well, I think that, you know, it's such a fine line, isn't it, as an animal owner, pet owner. You love your animal, and so you pay attention to them and the signs, and you look for the signs, and you might identify a change. But that line is where you don't become over anxious, where you're constantly thinking
hypochondriac,
on the animal, but at the same time not missing something, because it is difficult with animals to know.
Yeah, but
if
serious. Well, I totally agree with what you've just said, and I you know, unfortunately, I think you can take this whole thing a step further, because you know, the way in which we treat our pets is probably consistent in many ways with the way that we handle our children or our employees or our students or whatever role we have where we're in charge of other people. And I think it's always important to do our best, although we all fail miserably so much of the time, to do our best to remain to some extent emotionally distanced or separated, so that we can make a more honest and objective evaluation. And describing that in detail or explaining what I mean by that probably requires a long evening over a good dinner. But it's I think it's a bigger issue about how we generally attend to our lives and the people around us, you know.
The Animal Clinic.
Okay, so let's get down to the issue today. We're going to be talking about hair loss.
I got philosophical.
No, it's nice. It's good. Really good. I look forward to the dinner. I look forward to having that dinner.
I always get philosophical.
Around 11:41 on a Monday.
Sorry about that.
No, it's good. But let's get to the topic of discussion today, and of course any issues you're facing with your pet or animal. But we're looking at baldness, hair loss. You already outlined at the beginning of the show, Dr. Lucinda, for some of the types of loss you might see when it comes to hair, fur, that kind of thing. Somebody's texting here saying, my cat had this issue recently where he was having bald spots and sneezing and random vomiting. So we went to the doctor and they asked if I had dewormed them and then checked the cat for some sickness. At the end of the day, gave some meds for the sneezing and vomiting and dewormed him. Now he's as active as ever. So they're saying sometimes taking the animal to the vet is the only solution. So thanks for your thoughts on that. But if we're looking at another question that's come in regarding hair loss, and this is for a dog, it's an older dog, and it's just started to show a couple of spots, like a bit of baldness, so the hair of the dog's kind of gone around in the middle, like a little spot. It's kind of looks like almost like, I guess, I think they're saying in human would be like an acne spot. So any thoughts on that?
When you say in the middle, did you
of the baldness, so the hair's lost around the spot.
Oh, right.
You know what I mean? So the spots there and surrounding that area, the hair is lost. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if there's like an acne spot, that sort of suggests that there's a pimple, I would guess. And, you know, pimples generally, I mean, there can be a number of things, but the most common reason for a pimple on the skin is a superficial, which means just very, very on the surface, bacterial infection. So literally like pimples. And they can have hair loss around it. But and that, you know, obviously probably an antibacterial shampoo or something would probably sort it out. But you'd obviously need to have a check to be sure. Other things, they can get sort of blackheads or comedomes, they're called, which is basically, you know, sort of a blackish material that's sitting in the gland in the skin. That can indicate other sort of diseases. You know, nothing to get alarmed about. But I'm just trying to highlight that, you know, pimples can be infectious. They can actually just be literally serum or normal exudate in the skin that's accumulating, which could indicate something or not. It also can be that the dog's maybe scratched itself and caused an infection, so maybe the underlying cause was itchy. I'm not sure. And there also are certain, you know, hormonal diseases that can also cause changes in the skin. Things like an underactive thyroid or an overactive adrenal gland can do things like that. So, I mean, you know, I could probably talk ad nauseum about it, but, you know, I think it's important for you to assess if your dog is itchy and scratching, because if he is, that's something important to tell the vet. Over what sort of time period these changes have happened? Has it been associated with other changes, like has your dog gained weight? Has their appetite or drinking changed? And then possibly just go along and have them checked out and see what, you know, your vet says, because you can often just look at it in an instant, know exactly what it is.
Sure. Yeah.
You
know? Might be an insect bite, no?
It could be. Insect bites generally, you know, generally quite red and inflamed usually. Yeah. It might be, it could have been an old insect bite that then's now, you know, is now this is the way it looked and the hair has fallen out possibly because the dog chewed it or scratched it.
Mm.
But yeah, I mean, we do see insect bites here. Mosquitoes and other little things that fly around here do definitely, you know, bother dogs.
I wanted to ask you about mange. Now, mange is a word that we hear of and it might alarm us, but it doesn't sound very nice.
Mange is a commonly misused used word, because actually, you know, across different animal species, mange is actually caused by different things, you know. So basically, there's a type of mange in horses that's caused by a fungus. There's a type of mange in horses as well that's literally caused by an allergy to summer grasses. But for kind of general sort of speaking principles, when you're talking about dogs and cats, mange, from what I understand anyway, is actually caused by the Demodex mite. And Demodex is a common problem that we see in dogs, especially younger dogs, where they literally get bald patches. It's usually not itchy unless there's a secondary infection. And you see them going balding and you go to the vet and the vet does a skin scrape and sees an overpopulation of these mites, because Demodex mites actually live normally in the skin. And it's these individuals that actually have a issue where these mites then overgrow, and they grow so much that they affect the hair follicles that they just literally fall out. So if a dog has got mange, it's usually demodectic mange. It's not catching. You can't give it to people. You can't give it to other dogs. It's an individual thing. It requires a treatment, obviously. Usually it's resolvable. Can be frustrating and take a long time to treat, but you have to keep at it. And you know, once they've got over it, they're generally okay. Sometimes it can be very severe and affect the life of the dog. But you know, so if somebody, you know, if they're strictly being correct, mange, you're talking about the Demodex mites. But some people will come and go, oh, my cat's got mange. And it's literally the cat scratching because it's itchy, because it's allergic to something and it's going bald from the scratching. So it all depends on what you're actually defining with a mange. But I would say from a veterinary perspective, it's related to the mites in dogs.
Someone else is texting about their cat that's, they said actually they think it's been in a fight. It's a cat bite, they think. Mm. And so it's called a bit of caused baldness around the wound.
Yes.
It's a flat wound. They've been cleaning it up. They've put on like a Sudocreme, like an antiseptic cream.
Yeah.
But it's been over a week now. And when it was dry, it's now wet again.
Mm.
just thinking about using salt and water to clean the wound. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, I generally avoid salt water because it stings and they don't like it, and it's no real benefit for it. If you're cleaning it with an antiseptic soap or putting the cream on, that's fine. But the problem is, if this is, you know, a general simple wound, the treatment that you've given, it should be getting better now. So your cat's either licking it, actually self-traumatizing itself, which is why there's baldness around the outside, because they're fastidious groomers, as we've mentioned before. And so he could just be basically, you know, making it worse by licking it. And also there could be an infection, you know, under the skin. You know, if they are in fights and scratching and bitten, they get infections really easily. So if it's taken this long, it is possible that perhaps, you know, he does need an antibiotic. So it maybe needs to be checked out. Or your cat might need to have a Buster collar on or something to stop it licking the wound, to actually allow it to dry out and to get better. You know, so I think it's totally reasonable what you've done, and I think it's the right thing to do for minor cuts and scrapes. But if it's you're actually not getting anywhere, it's possible that, you know, you do unfortunately need to have a vet visit.
Mm. Coming back on the question regarding the dog and behavior. So when the cat's close to the dog is yawning and panting. They're saying they think it's anxious. Would you agree?
Whether it's anxiety or excitement, I can't say. You know, I think one would need to know a little bit more about it. I mean, you know, obviously I'm assuming this is a new dog and a new cat in terms of they're coming together probably recently. So it's not like the cat and the dog have been fine and now the dog's behavior has changed. This is probably a situation, I'd assume, where you're introducing either the cat or the dog to each other. Dogs panting, it can be fear, it can be excitement, it can be anxiety, it can be even an early aggressive behavior, you know. The yawning is interesting. I mean, look, I'm not an animal behaviorist, but from what I understand, yawning in a dog is actually a submissive behavior. They'll often, if two dogs are coming together, you know, dogs that sort of roll over on their back and often yawn, like a puppy will often yawn around its mom or its dad if they're getting, reprimanded. So the yawning, it could possibly indicate submission. So I would then, I mean, talk about really, really jumping to conclusions. I would extrapolate that the dog's probably excited, interested in the cat, and is probably yawning because it's having a positive reaction, not a negative reaction to the cat. So there could be a bit of fear in there. Maybe the cat's hissing and spitting, and that's why the dog's yawning in response. I'm not sure. But that's what I would guess is going on.
Interesting, yeah. See, isn't it? Gosh, it's not easy.
That was a massive extrapolation.
It was.
I know, well, and done. I thought, and yeah. No, Todd. I mean, know. Todd hates it when I extrapolate.
My point is that everything that she just said might be right,
yes,
and could very easily be completely off base because we just don't have enough information.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
I'd like to just add that again, you know, it comes down to the behavior side of things, as Lucinda said, and, you know, just ask yourself the first very simple question, and that is, do you get the sense that the dog and the cat are trying to stay away from each other or are enjoying each other's company? I don't know if those questions have been answered yet or not, but that'll give you some sort of clue as well, I think.
Thank you very much, Jennifer, for texting in to say, I just want to thank you for your new show, Animal House, myself and my cat, that's Chat-O, enjoy the programme. So we're glad to hear that,
that's
Jennifer.
Great, thanks.
Happy to hear you. A cat is listening.
And we are posting questions up on our website, on the Animal Clinic site for the Animal House. So Todd and Lucinda, very kindly, after the show ends, continue answering your questions through the week. So if you've got any questions, we're going to post this one up here regarding animals. And it's when they're looking in the eye of the other. It's about a foster cat. It's had surgery. It's missing an eye. And the other eye is scarred, and so they're saying he can't see anything above his eye level, and they've got a question for you regarding this situation, so we'll post that up on the site. So just go to dubaieye103.com/Dubai Today, and you can click into the Animal House there and connect with our experts as the show comes to an end. A quick mention for the annual puppy ball for K9, that's coming up in May, so again it's at the Raffles Hotel, but helping a good cause with K9 and supporting that dog charity, so you can check that out. Linda's posted up information regarding the dog we mentioned earlier, who's lost. It's been picked up and he's got one eye, and the thing is, if you've lost your Cocker Spaniel, this accident, the trauma to the eye could have happened after he was lost. So if you've lost a Cocker Spaniel, you know anybody that does, it's all up on our Facebook page and on our website to get, you can see a picture of the dog and another one as well called Amy that's gone missing after a family were camping in the desert. We've got to reveal our What's the Animal? And the answer was, of course, swan, the beautiful swan. And a big thank you again to Dr. Lucinda Natras from DKC Veterinary Clinic at Motor City and Todd Carson, Managing Partner of Dubai Kennels and Cattery.
Thank you.
Big thank you. Thanks a lot.
Can I just say goodbye to all the cats that are listening? Meow, 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 meow.
And to play out, so here's a little rendition from Mike Reed regarding, you know, that ugly duckling. What did it turn into?
Lo and behold, he said, you are in order. Look at me, I am a swan. Terrific. I'm not such an ugly duckling. No feathers all stubby and brown. For in fact, these birds in so many words went core the best in town. Look at that. What a mover. Gotta be the governor. Not a quack, not a whack, or a waddle, or a quack, but a glide and a whistle and a snowy white back, and a head held noble and high. Say you's an ugly duckling, not I. Oi, who's a pretty boy now then? Look at that dolly swan over there. I think I'll go and blow down her ear, take her down the lake, once or twice spinning round there, a few balls.